Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Okay, continuing on page 4. On verse 4. Okay. Actually, with verse 3. Verse 3 closes the Mangalacharan by describing the prayojana achieved by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Pibhita Bhagavatam rasamalayam muhur aho rasika bhuri bhavika. This particularly applies to hearers who are already liberated souls, as well as the speaker, Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So in here, then, the description is there of rasa. Because rasa is actually what is the goal. Like that. We're trying to obtain rasa. Rasa is the pleasure potency. But that rasa is experienced during the performance of activities, as we mentioned before. That when an activity is happening, you're actually experiencing it. At the moment, you're in the present. So that's actually the mode of goodness. When you stop to think how nice it is, you're not experiencing it anymore. Now you're remembering what you were experiencing. That makes it past. So that actually puts it into ignorance. Right? So only if it's Krishna, then it doesn't matter if it's present or ignorance. You know, it doesn't matter. Because Krishna in past, present, and future is still transcendental because he always exists. So if you think of him in the past, that's eternal, so it's still present. You think of him in the future, it's still present. So there'll be a difference there. So when one is experiencing it, then that is actually what one is looking for. So the result is a mechanical operation that you must have to get an experience to perform the activity. Does that make any sense? Is that too many words in one place? Okay. If you think about it, you're thinking, I want to get the goal. But the goal, it's not the goal that's looking for. It's the elements of the present that is what you're trying to get. Means in the mind, one is working to get the future. But if the experience at present isn't something inspiring, you're not going to endeavor for that. Does that make sense? So in other words, what's going on now has to be worthwhile. Right? There must be some inspiration in some way. That is what's going to keep you going. Does that make any sense? Okay. You're getting confused on that I want something and I'm working for getting that, but it's no big deal working for getting that. Okay, now let us say you have that. Now what? Right? You want a house. You work to get the house. Now you have the house. Now what? Right? So then you got it. So now everything should be fine. So does it stop there? No. Then you have to engage. In other words, you're trying to get it so you can do things with it. You can do activities with it. Right? So it's activities that are important. Right?
All right. Who's the Vedic god of lateness?
I think I must have fallen under his influence. It's probably something to do with the color. I didn't even go to sleep last night. Yeah, it's probably something to do with the color. I stayed up all night.
I should just set you up right here so then you can just type and look up.
Please continue. Where were you?
We were just trying to, because just on the close of verse 3, mm-hmm. we're going to just okay. do verse 4, but we're trying to bring home the point that the experience of the present is actually what the living entity is endeavoring for. But we're getting a lot of confused looks because everybody works for a result.
Mm.
But that result is never the final. You understand? Krishna is the only final result. Because everything else is something going somewhere. You want a house, but what do you want a house for? Okay, you got a house, great. So what? What are you going to do with the house? Why did you want the house? There has to be a cause. Right? What are you going to do with the house? You want to have guests over, you want to live there peacefully, you want your free time, you want, you know, a place for your children, you want, you know, whatever it is that is important to you in your life, how you live personally, that's what your house is for. So it's not actually a goal. Right? And so then you want children, but that's not a goal either. What do you want to do with the children? Oh, you want to interact with them. Why do you want to interact with them? Because then there'll be so many benefits from that. And then there's, you know, the sweetness when they're younger, and then when they're older, then there's the nice interaction and the security. You understand? So nothing's ever a goal. It's a goal now, just like I want to walk from here to there. So I could say that first step, that's my goal, I want to get to that place there. Right? So people don't know where they're going, so they think each step, that's a goal. Oh, now we'll put this step. Okay. Now we'll be then. Okay. Now we'll be that. Okay. Now we'll put this step. Okay. And that's what material life is. That's why it says an illusion. It's completely, that's why it's called a well. It's like closed in. You can't see what's going on, because you're just right here, what's going on. But when you add Krishna, then you know where you're going. Then all these things happen, but it's in a progression to get something else. Then it's no big deal. It's not a big thing. Wow, the step. Wow, I tell you, you know, everybody, look, I got to here. No, you can just happily walk from here to there with no trips. You ever dealt with somebody who there's no trips? You ever had a situation where you're interacting with someone and there's no trips, you could say what you like, and you weren't going to get a volcanic reaction? Ever had that? Raise your hand if you've ever had that. Okay. This is the problem. Okay.
That, by the way, you mentioned the other day this hermeneutics and that's what you were just talking about, just what it's about. Yeah. But since it's all explained in the second canon.
Yeah. No, we'll get into detail.
We don't have to explain it here, but that's actually, hermeneutics is the science of explanation of scripture.
Mm.
And what it does, it takes us out of this step by step, you know, advanced so-called progress into the future onto the transcendental platform. And so that's fully explained there.
Okay.
Except I changed the name. I introduced hermeneutics, explain what the source of this actually is. The source of this word is actually an ancient Greek deity. So therefore I said, for our purposes, we're going to call it Krishnanoitics. Krishna is our deity, not Hermes.
Yeah.
It's an ancient Greek god.
Hermes, okay.
But it's the secret. Hermeneutics means the actual secret or most confidential understanding of the scripture. Because you can read scripture like any other book, you know. When do we get to the end? You know, what happens at the end, you know? But that's not the point. You know, Bhagavatam, you're not supposed to read with that in mind. I'm going to start Canto 1, finish with Canto 12, and, you know, put the book on the shelf. That's it. I read it. You're supposed to keep reading it, keep reading it, keep reading it. Because something, it is taking you somewhere that has nothing to do with direct, you know, spatial direction, time, place. You know, so... But I need not say more.
Yeah, because just trying to make it understandable about this presence. Okay, let us try another angle. Krishna, he is existence, right? That's what the masculine principle, he is existence. So everything is there because of him, right? Because it's all him. Now, the masculine principle means there is the energetic. That's the energetic. Then there must be energy, right? Otherwise, then he's a neuter, right? Neuter means it doesn't have any generative power. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then you get the internal potency, which is there. It's non-different from him, because his existence means his opulence and his power to do things are there. Right? Anything that happens is Krishna's energy. So we say Krishna created everything. Yes, but he did it through his energy. Just he desires and the energy does it. Right? So when these are together, this is the Atmarama principle. And so then there is no need of activity, because one is satisfied in oneself, because the male and female principle are perfectly balanced in a passive state. Does this make sense? Like that. Then, but to expand that pleasure, because Atmarama we say is good, but we say that there are things more good than Atmarama. That's actual interaction with another living entity. Therefore, then Krishna expands the internal potency. And then you have rasa. So rasa means where the existence then interacts for some purpose, right? To taste rasa. Does that make sense? Okay. So the gaining of it is not the rasa. It is there, of course, something. But the rasa is in the process of gaining it. You understand? Means you have existence and you have prayojana. So they're connected by abhideya. So when these are connected through abhideya, that is rasa. If they're not connected, then it's atmarama. What am I saying? Like that. We're only giving, you know, there is no time and space in Krishna, so it means it's like this. But when there's interacting, does that make sense? So that is why, even though the third verse is the prayojana verse, the second one is actually important. Because the third verse says that there are the rasas, but unless those rasas are operated, you cannot taste them. Does that make sense? It's just like this. Imagine, okay, think of something think of a person who, if there is such a person, there's a deep emotional you've had a deep emotional experience with that was favorable. Okay? And so some feeling is there in the heart that's generated in that thought. Right? Okay? But now if you look at it, what is going on in that remembrance? In other words, there's an activity or a quality or something where there are two persons interacting. Right? It's not just the feeling, oh yes, I feel the bhav, or I feel the bliss, or I feel the happiness, or I feel the one. That's for idiot impersonalists. But if you think about it, whatever in your mind, of anything, you think of any friend, relative, this, that, it's always in an activity.
I mentioned the other day, this is more or less repeating, but I'll add an example that the other Vaishnava sampradayas, the very Vedantic ones, their Vedanta acharyas who they follow, like the Dvaitavadis and the Sri Vaishnavas and the Pushtimari. What's the
Vallabhans or Pushkin?
Vishnu Swami Acharya.
Oh, Vishnu Swami.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Rudra Sampradaya. Balabhacharya, they don't even recognize, they don't even accept the connection to Vishnu Swami.
Really? So,
yeah.
Oh.
They don't know anything about him.
Jai.
So, anyway, but these great acharyas, so because their concern was to establish Vaishnavism in terms of Vedanta, therefore their main purpose is sambandha, is to establish, because Brahman is the origin of everything. So as the origin of everything, everything must have its sambandha with Brahman. But the Mayavadis say no, because everything besides Brahman is Maya. So the Vaishnavas say this is illogical. And to make this very clear, they point out that Brahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not just some white light or, you know, glorified junior, glorified Buddhist void. Mm-hmm. He's an actual person. But this is sambandha, just to see the connection of the Lord to everything. So that's established by the first verse. And then, of course, the second verse establishes abhideya, the activity of that. Once the relationship is understood, then there must, because Brahman, Param Brahman is a person, and you are a person, then there must be interaction, personal relationship. So that's abhideya, that's bhakti, the process of bhakti. And then prayojana naturally follows. Now, someone who would put all the stress on prayojana, who would say, yeah, all that Vedanta philosophy, that's all speculation, it's too hard, never mind that. And the abhideya too, following rules and regulations, having to get up early in the morning, worship deity, follow all these rules and regulations, what's that? So the bowels, for example, one of the 13 apasampradayas, they say in everyone's heart there's the sonar manush, which means the golden man, which means, of course, their version of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that golden man is in everyone's heart already, and that golden man is the real you. So all you have to do is, it's just like you were saying, you know, without relating to anybody else. Of course, they do relate to others, and that's what Prabhupada said about the Mayavadis. They say the world is illusion, but they're very expert in enjoying that illusion. Mm. So they say, within every man, there's Krishna. Within every woman, there's Radharani. So to get to that sonar manush, there must be rasa. And they mean, of course, of the gross material kind. So there's activity. But because they're, you know, according to their philosophy, that activity is Maya, it's not real. So really, there's no activity going on. Just at the end, you realize, I am the sonar manush. I always was. Now that I've realized it, I always will be. I'm just tasting nectar, you know, the nectar of my own existence. So forever. Without really doing anything except, you know, taking drugs and having illicit sex. Which is, yes, it's Maya. But so is chanting Hare Krishna. Everything is Maya. That's Mayavadi philosophy. So therefore I made that point. If you meet anybody who simply talks about prayojan, you know, who's just a prayojan body, and minimizes abhideya, especially abhideya, but also sambandha. Sambandha jnana and abhideya minimizes it, not important. like anyway, these sahajas, they make up stories that what was that the Jiva Goswami wrote one commentary, and I think it was Sanatana threw it in a well, something like that, and said this is all this is not the real thing. Because there's one Apa Sampradaya called the Darvesh, and Sanatana Goswami is there. Why? Because when he went to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leaving Bengal and going to Vrindavan area to get through, you know, to get past, because the Nawab's men were looking for him, he dressed as a Darvesh, which means a Muslim pilgrim on his way to Mecca. So he was headed in that direction, and then he was actually going to Vrindavan, not onward into the desert to Mecca. And so now there's one of the 13 Apa Sampradayas called the Darvesh, and they say Sanatana Goswami is their man, you know, their founder Acharya, because he dressed up like a Darvesh. And so they say that Rupa Goswami came to him, Jiva Goswami came to him having written some very profound critical commentary on other, you know, positions of other philosophers, and Sanatana Goswami just threw it in a well and said, this is all just mental speculation. And of course, this never happened, but these are the kind of stories that circulate among the sahajas. That you don't need philosophy, you don't need sadhana, you know, you don't need to understand the connection of everything to Krishna. Why? Because everything's maya anyway. What you need is the bliss of the Sonar Manush, the golden man. You know, who appeared externally as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but who is actually you.
So they're not actually Vaishnavas. They're not actually Vaishnavas.
The vowels?
Yeah.
Whoever said they were Vaishnavas. The vowels are, the word Balya means crazy. That's the actual translation. Balya means insane. These people are crazy. And their philosophy is crazy, their practice is crazy. And so this is just the point. It was interesting what you were saying about the need of relationship, interaction, activity to achieve an end. But the bowels, they don't accept that, actually. I mean, they accept that there's activity, but this is all maya, you see. Mm-hmm. Therefore, among these kind of really degraded mayavadis, it doesn't matter what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can reach prema anyway. In fact, some of them say, yes, you should chant Hare Krishna. You should surrender to the holy name completely, which means you shouldn't follow any regulative principles when you chant. Because that means you're taking shelter of something else. You should smoke bidi, eat fish, have illicit sex, smoke hookah, do all kinds of nonsense, and chant Hare Krishna. And that's real faith in the holy name.
That's like the agoras or something.
Yeah, actually, it's all mixed in there, the tantra and everything. But these people, because they're crazy, they ruin the actual philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's said that at the time Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared and started his mission, these sahajas had become so prominent that practically even in Bengal, people's understanding of Gaudiya Vaishnava, they would immediately think of some owl or bowl or Karta Bhaja or Sakshaki Beki, one of these 13 Apa Sampradayas. That's what Gaudiya Vaishnava meant to them, because they've become so prominent. And in every one of them, there's this one common element that they've brought in the Mayavadi philosophy, which then, of course, negates Sambandha and Abhidhya, because you are Krishna. You know, so the only thing you have to connect with is yourself, but you're already connected to yourself. You're already yourself. You're already Krishna. The only reason you don't know you're Krishna is because you're Nimaya. So they give the example of if you dream of a tiger, it makes you wake up. So if you do terrible things, horrible, sinful things, it's good because it'll wake you up. You know, and then you'll realize that you're the golden man. And you'll be in bliss. You see? I mean, I hope nobody becomes convinced by this. But that is their philosophy. You see? Do any nasty thing. The more nasty thing, they got that from Tantra, Agora, like you said, Agora Tantra. You know, go to a crematorium, sit down on a dead body, chant Hare Krishna or whatever. And, you know, in this way, you do something really horrible that just shocks you into suddenly realizing that you are the golden man, you are the Sunar Manush. And if someone says, wait a minute, that's crazy, well, because they're the bowels, the crazy men, they go, Kijai, we made it. Yes. Now you've understood. Yes, we are crazy. We are liberated. We are prema bhaktas. We are insane.
Yeah, Prabhupada mentions that the Mayavad philosophy is the cause of so much sense gratification, because prayojana means attachment. So then,
so that I was trying to bring to why the Bhagavatam is pastimes. You know, why Vedanta is not the higher principle. Because Vedanta discusses sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan, though half of it is on sambandha, but is simply trying to establish that the Lord, the devotees, devotional service, the goal of love of God, these are important. So basically it's a sambandha shastra. But the Puranas, we see, they are just the Lord and his devotees, the interaction, it's pastimes. So that is that philosophy in action, being applied. So that's why it's the most important. So the activity is something we're always going to be doing. So it's a matter of what the activity and how well it's nicely connected to Krishna. You know, according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra, then it has purpose, right? Does that make sense? That's why when you're doing a service, let us say you're sincere, and it doesn't necessarily work out, you feel bad that I didn't get the good result for Krishna. But other broad-minded Vaishnavas say, no, but it was that endeavor, that trying to please Krishna, it's important. But you keep trying until you do get the proper result for Krishna. But that sincere endeavor, that itself is glorious. That's actually what Krishna is looking for. Because the goal anyway is him, so it's not that he needs to obtain him. He's trying to obtain the interaction between him and his devotees. Yes.
And this carries on indefinitely, because even when we're not in these bodies anymore,
when the spiritual world
is continuous, because it is always the activity and the relationship, not the result, because even in the spiritual world.
Yeah, means the result is Krishna's pleasure, but that pleasure is gained through the activity.
So,
because then Krishna's pleasure, because it's Krishna, it comes to the present. That's the thing, is that to intellectually understand, then we break it up into sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Krishna doesn't do that. We do that. We need to do that to get out of the material world. But in the spiritual world, you don't need to make that distinction. Because future is present, past is present. Because it's Krishna. So there is no, that's why there is no passion or ignorance in the spiritual world. It's only pure goodness. Because it's always present. Though you may be thinking of the future, I'm going to meet Krishna. But because it's Krishna, he exists now, it moves to the present.
So
And you thought of, we were with Krishna and moves to the present. So the experience is always in the present. Therefore, it's always in the, in the, in pure goodness.
And some devotees really want to get to the really esoteric, intimate topics of prayojan. And when you get there, you find out that Srimati Radharani has a name, Yuteshwari, because she's the leader of what's known as Yuta. Yuta is a group of gopis. So Lalita, Vishakha are her lieutenants, and then they have a whole crew of gopis and manjaris, and there are many, countless other yutas, and each one of them have their Yuteshwari. It's just like the main competitor is Yuteshwari is Chandravali.
They say she who mentioned her name.
Hmm?
I was going
to
say.
Oh yeah, we're not supposed to mention her name. Okay, sorry about that. But there's many others too.
You can use Voldemort.
They're all competing for Krishna's attention, and it's described in these. You know, you may think, oh, if I, you know. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually, in some of his songs, prayojana level songs, he's praying that may I enter the yuta of Srimati Radharani. So we may think, oh yes, if we can get into the yuta, the group of Radharani, that's going to be... But then when he describes, or the Goswamis describe, she's the commander, and she's telling all the gopis, now, you know, make those garlands, and it's like, really heavy, you know, because it's for Krishna, and she's inspecting everything, and she wants her yuta to be the best. You want to know where all this, you know, we have this, Prabhupada introduced this, what's called transcendental competition, where different temples would compete who can distribute the most books or sankirtan parties or whatever. Where does it all come from? It comes from there. It comes from the highest state of prema bhakti. This is the origin of transcendental competition. These different yutas of gopis competing to serve Krishna. And the reason why Radharani's Yuteshwari is the best is because Radharani is actually Krishna in female form. And nobody knows better how to please Krishna than Krishna himself in female form. But Krishna's so merciful, he gives a chance to all the... That's why that last prayer of Lord Chaitanya, he's in the mood of Radharani. And he's saying, whether you embrace me or trample me under your feet, whether you act like my lover or a lumpat, means a debauchee, and you go with others, means you go with other yutas, other yuteshwaris. He's doing that because he's so merciful. He's accepting everyone's service, but Radharani is the best. And everyone knows that, actually. Everyone knows that, but Krishna is so kind that he's giving still everyone a chance. There's all these beautiful scenes, like in the evening, these yutas, they form bands. They go to different parts of the Braja forest, and they play like Radharani's expert veena player. And I think it's several of the gopis are very good mridanga players in the group, Lalita Vishakha.
Yeah, I think Tuna did as well.
And they play their different instruments, and Chandravali's got her little group, and they play the most beautiful, enchanting music, and it's resonating throughout the whole Vrindavan forest at night, coming from different directions, and it's just to attract Krishna, because they know Krishna's out there, and so they're competing with one another to make the most beautiful music and singing. They're singing and calling Krishna, singing so beautifully, and then when Krishna comes near, they'll start to dance. They do these. These are described where a gopi will bend backwards so that the back of her head, she's standing, and bend back so the back of her head will touch the ground. She's in bow. They do dances in which they assume such kind of shapes. This is all simply to attract Krishna. Mm. You see, they're all trying. So this is the prayojana. This is what the prayojana is really like. Mm-hmm. It's intense competition. So it's actually, you see, the avidyaya is still going on. Mm-hmm. The avidyaya, even in prayojana, is going on. The prayojana is the success will be whether Krishna will accept our service tonight. And, you know, but what he'll most likely do is just expand himself into hundreds of thousands and millions of forms and just meet with all of the yutas and be with them all and please them all. But sometimes he'll, to encourage that transcendental competition, just one Krishna will be there, and he'll go just to one, and all the others, then they will continue making their music, but it's that music of the rag of lamentation, you see. So that's what's going on up there in the highest reaches of love of Godhead. So anybody has any plans to achieve that had better get into transcendental competition now. Trying to make our service to Krishna, you know, not in the offensive sense, better than everyone else, but pleasing, most pleasing to Krishna. That should be our aim, to really try to satisfy Krishna. Just like here in the Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. So we have these two famous twin brother pujaris. They're the example for the whole movement. Because as pujaris, no one can compete with them in satisfying Sri Krishna. You told me yourself that when they joined, Prabhupada made the comment that now Radha Madhava's pujaris have come, as if from the spiritual world they had been sent. Radha Madhava were here, but the question was, who's going? This is Radha Madhava, this is the chief deity of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Of course we have, Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath, but Radha Madhava is the same as Gopinath, none different. And it's very special, very intimate, because Madhava means that he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, but he's with Radharani. So Radharani is more attractive to him than Lakshmi. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that Srimati Radharani is Lakshmi Devi herself. The Mahalakshmi, in one way, they have Lakshmi Puja, everyone's trying to get her favor. But in that form as Cowherd Girl in Vrindavan, she has Krishna, and Krishna has her. So Radha Madhava is most unique deity. And Prabhupada said that they brought their pujaris. Only these two could serve them. So, to be recognized like that by Krishna should be our goal. But that's all about abhidhaya. You don't get recognition by just standing there and crying and doing nothing. You know, like these sahajiyas, Prakriti sahajiyas who make these kirtan, they have this in East Bengal especially, but they're called namjag. And they're very expert in keeping hot chili powder tied into their dhoti, you know, and they sing very beautifully, you know, that actually, not really. Prabhupada said it's like howling. You can hear them here too. And while they're doing that, and everyone's going into ecstasy, because everyone has to act like they're in ecstasy, so they all kind of, you know, when the singer notices they're not looking at me, they're all kind of, their eyes are rolled back, and because it's all imitation. Then he'll get some of that chili pepper and throw it into his eyes real quick, and then of course his tears come. And when the people look at him again, oh, he's crying. He's in pain. And they have this thing, he'll touch one person and that one person will start to shake and fall on the ground, and another will come to pick him up, and he'll start, you know, like some electric current is being passed through the whole audience. But this is all just a big show. It's just, this is just, has become Bengali culture, you know, Bengali village culture, just to act it out. But it's meaningless. And this is the sahajas. They go directly for what they imagine to be the prayojan, which this so-called, which is the ecstasy of cayenne pepper in your eyes. Some ecstasy, huh? Some bhava. But the actual ecstasy is gained through, as Mara's been explaining, avidya. Even in the highest reaches of pure prema bhakti, that is what's going on. Transcendental competition to see who satisfies Krishna the most.
Maybe to make it a little bit more. See, so what's happening here is you're getting a what do you call it? A problem between the intelligence and the mind here. Because when we say prayojan is not actually the what you're ultimately trying to gain, then the intelligence goes, what? But at the same time, is the difficulty is the mind can't catch it. Because if the mind accepts it, then we accept something. Because the intelligence discerns between things, and the mind then chooses what it likes. So what the mind likes is what you call yourself, is your identity. So let us look at it from the angle of the mind. The mind goes thinking, feeling, willing. In other words, sambandha prayojana abhideya. Right? That's how it works. It means you have an interest in something, when that interest grows to where it's a need, right? Where there's feelings about it, when it's not just intellectual, then you act, right? Until there's a feeling about it, you don't act. Does that make sense? So then, and you're acting to get the prayojana, but you already have to have touched prayojana to even endeavor for it. Does that make sense? In other words, let us say you're sitting and you're looking at something, and you're thinking, that would be interesting, nice to eat, or you know something. So there's an interest, but it hasn't become a need. Then, as you think about it more, go, well, I am hungry, and that would be really good. So now it's a need. Once it's become a need, then you'll endeavor to acquire it. Does that make sense? Right. So the abhideya is actually the third. In application, it goes sambandha prayojana abhideya. And the experience during abhideya, that is actually what is important. Does that make some sense? Okay. Another thing, just in case there's a problem also with the, well, hey, what about the prayojana? Is, Maharaj was pointing out here, is something very subtle here, is that the principle is you have a preliminary to something, you have an activity, and you have a conclusion. Right? If you don't have all three, it's not complete. Does that make sense? So all the Vedic things, there's preliminaries, there's the activity, there's a conclusion. If you look at anything you do that's successful and satisfying, it has all three of those. Right? Isn't it? I mean, so you think about it, because you have to get the mind involved. The mind needs some time to the preliminaries to adjust to it. Then the activity itself, which was what was nice, then there's some conclusion. Right? So it must continue with activity. So
Therefore, Sambandha also has these same three parts, Abhideya and Prayojana. Right? So you have Sambandha, 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 Abhideya, Sambandha, Prayojana. Right? Within Sambandha. Same in Abhideya, same in Prayojana. So what is being presented here is that what we're looking at is, because we're pointing out that Abhideya is the thing, but Abhideya doesn't mean that we have interest in Krishna, therefore we want to, you know, either we are in that love for Krishna, then we perform activities to please Krishna. Right? So the prayojan is being experienced, but it's only an experience. Right? It's not dynamic.
I think another very important thing to point out is that the prayojan is awarded by Krishna.
Yeah,
it's not something that you, yeah, by your own by your abhideya, you just get it by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no,
it's given by Krishna.
By Krishna, yeah.
It's His mercy. So the mood of the devotees is simply to serve Krishna. The Bhagavatam is full of these kind of prayers.
Uh-huh.
Just let me serve your lotus feet. Because mm-hmm. that is a position that a devotee wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the Lord is, if He's somehow pleased, if He's somehow kind, He may come and bless me with His personal presence. He may show some intimate kindness.
Mm-hmm.
But the devotee's service does not depend on that.
Yeah.
It doesn't depend on that, and that's really the meaning of mm-hmm. pure devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
It's because that is the function of the jiva, to serve. Nityara Krishna Das is our function, to serve Krishna, and that's again referring back to the last Shikshashtakam prayer. That's exactly what Mahaprabhu was saying. You may embrace me, or you may trample me, you may treat me badly, but you're still the Lord of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes she becomes so upset, she tells her friends, I don't want to hear about this Krishna anymore. I don't want to talk about Him. I don't want to know anything about Him. This Krishna is so bad. He's just driving me crazy. So don't say anything about Krishna anymore, ever again. Just don't think about Krishna. I don't want Him to come here. And she'll just go on like that, and then finally the other gopis will say, but Srimati Radharani, you keep talking about Krishna, you yourself, complaining in that way, you yourself don't stop talking about Krishna. So devotees are simply addicted to Krishna, they're simply addicted to serving Him. That's their position. And whether they get prayojan or not, that's actually up to Krishna.
Mm.
So their service doesn't depend on that.
Mm. Yeah. It's just like, let's give an example. Let's find. Let us see, say, a lady sees a very cute, chubby, nice kid. So she appreciates that. So it just stays at that? Or does she want to interact, say something, make them smile? Yes or no? Okay. So that's my point, is the experience of this is nice, or I love Krishna so much, and that's great. That's what we're trying to establish ourselves at. But in that, if you're going to show that, express it, you have to do something. Right? Does that make sense? Right? In other words, if you love somebody, you're going to do something for them. You don't just sit there and just, oh, so nice, and this and that. You know? Would that be enough? Any wife would go, oh, my husband's sitting in the next room and he's just appreciating how, you know, great I am, and he loves for me so much and all that. And so then the other lady says, so how do you pay the bills? And so,
Well, we don't, you know, but, you know, what to do? He loves me so much. He sits there and appreciates. Would that fly? No. So why it'll fly with Krishna? In other words, if you love somebody, you do something. So that's the point, is that the love is the goal, in that it's the platform for which, because that is there, the love, you do something. So you're trying to get love of God, because then you'll always do something for Krishna. Right? Now we sometimes do, sometimes don't, because we don't have that love. Right? What we do love is what we're doing things for. We love our house, our car, our money. We're working for that. But when we love Krishna, then we'll always be doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
So that's why we're saying is the Abhideya is the important element. But technically speaking, what we're talking here is just the philosophical Abhideya, whereas we're just sticking it right in between the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. But what we're talking about is within Prayojana, the activities that go on in that love of God, the Abhideya that's there. So that's what Maharaj is meaning by Radha Madhava. Is it's the element of Govinda within Gopinath. Because it must be active. Otherwise, if it's not active, why did Krishna have to expand himself? He expands himself, so there's activity. Yes? No?
Yes.
So that's why then, from now we see from verse 4, then it is pastime. So there's three verses that explain the concepts in philosophy, and then immediately it dives into activity. The fourth verse, you know, it's just out of the middle of nowhere, then you just say, you know, there were some sages sitting at Naimisharani. It's kind of like, where'd that come from? Right? That's because they're establishing that's where it's all happening, the Lord and His devotees, like that. So verse 4 is the opening of a narrative about the sages of Naimisharani forest headed by Shaunaka Rishi, who endeavor to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice to please Lord Krishna and his devotees. Their sincere hope is to mitigate the inauspicious influence of the age of Kali, which is now upon the world. Fearing a mere fire sacrifice will not be enough, they ask Suta Goswami 6 questions that are fundamental to the entire text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here their hope to mitigate the inauspicious influence meant that people will forget about Krishna. Not that, you know, religious and moral principles will be broken. That's not the problem. The problem is people are not God conscious. Okay. Question 1. What is the absolute and ultimate good, Shreya, for people in general? Answer. After describing that devotional service to Sri Krishna was the essence of the scriptures, Sutta explains that the ultimate benefit for people in general is to become free from material bondage and develop love of God through devotional service offered only to Krishna or his plenary parts. Especially Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6.7, but also verse 27. Question 2. What is the essence of all the scriptures? Answer. Throughout the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, and especially in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6.7, and continuing on to text 28, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is confirmed as the only object of worship, and establishing one's lost relationship with Him in love and service through devotional service is proclaimed as sum and substance of the Vedic literatures. So you always see here is that to develop love for Him through devotional service, free from material bondage, develop love through devotional service. See, so in other words, we're freeing ourselves from the material world means we're establishing ourselves as servant of Krishna, right? So then we develop love for Him through devotional service. So the emphasis always comes back to that element, right? We're not trying to in any way reduce or confuse the point about developing of love of God as our goal, but we're saying once you've developed that, you're going to develop that through service, and you're going to cultivate that through continued service. So in other words, service becomes the prominent. Right? Does that make some sense? Okay. I'll give another try one last time. Another example.
Okay, you have a man and a woman, right? They become a couple, they get married. They have children. So up to this point of the children, then the husband and wife are the most important, right? There's what happens in the house is what they want to do. Now when that child is born, who is the center of the house? The child. Because they're the connection between the man and the woman. So between the sambandha and the prayojana, you have the child. Does that make sense? So now, what you do in the house has to be considered around the child. Does that make some sense? So in other words, where the two connect, that's actually where the attention is. Right? So where sambandha and prayojana meet, which is abhideya, that's where the focus is. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So may husband and wife will decide we'll do this, we'll do that, but they always will it has to be in consideration of the child. Does that make sense? Question 3. Tell why Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared. Verse 13 may be included here. See purport. Answer. The question is answered in 1.2.34, to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. In addition, this question is answered in 1.8.35, 9.4.61, 10.8.48 through 50, and 10.33.37. Question 4. Describe the activities of the incarnations of the Lord. Answer. The Lord's incarnations are described in chapter 3 of the first canto. More detailed descriptions of the incarnations are recounted through the remainder of the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Question 5. Tell us of the acts the Lord performs in relation to creating the material world. Answer. The question is answered in 1.2.30.33, wherein Bhagavatam explains how Vasudeva creates the material substance and enters into it as the Purusha incarnations. In addition, cantos 3 and 4 relate the creation of the universe and its population by all species. Question 6. 1.1.2.3. Where have religious principles gone after Krishna's disappearance from this planet? Answer. Sutta Goswami answers this question in 1.3.43 by declaring, this Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So these six questions, they are the basis that the whole rest of the Bhagavatam would be based on. To answer these questions, then we see the description or the relating the pastimes between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikit to answer these six questions in full. Is that and it's, so from there it expands and then we get the ten topics, everything. But these are like fundamental. So basically what we're seeing is that ultimate good, I mean, whatever is there is in relationship to Krishna, right? Through devotional service, in the association of devotees. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the whole Bhagavatam, that will be the theme. How the devotees are relating and interacting with Krishna. This makes some sense. So that's the summary of the first three chapters. Something, sir?
Yes, so. Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
We start with chapter
4. Yeah.
We, I think it's obvious why we brought chapters 1, 2, and 3 together in one summary, because the questions are asked in chapter 1 and answered in 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So then we'll
they can be yeah, the goes together very well. Yeah. Okay, so then tomorrow we'll see it'll pick up quickly, because after this then the summaries sometimes are even just one paragraph. Please?
Maharaj, you were mentioning in the beginning how the experience is in the mode of goodness and the remembrance is in the mode of ignorance. Now, are we talking relative or absolute? Because when we remember Krishna, wouldn't that be in goodness, whether you're experiencing it, whether you're remembering it, and where does the passion come from?
That's what we said, because Krishna is anything with Krishna, then it brings it to the present. That's why it says here, he came to proclaim, to save those who are situated in pure goodness. Though it means you can only be in pure goodness if you're always remembering Krishna. Right? Because passion means there's something you want in the future. I want to be here, or want to do this. So it's passion, because it's not now. But Krishna is now. So if you're thinking, I'm going to meet Krishna, it's like he's saying, the gopis are talking about Krishna. We want to meet Krishna, and then we'll do this, and we'll do that. It's already service. They're already performing mental service. It's manasa puja. So it's in the present. And when they think about the past, then they're always talking about Krishna. But because it's Krishna, that is actually service. It's in the present. So that's why that is pure goodness. Well, just now I am here. Let's say, right, that something happens and you're very riveted on that. The reason that has an impression on you is because it was the present. Past and future don't have as... I mean, they burn a lot in the heart. They do different things. But actually what's really you remember is what anything that's present. Right? So any activity you go and you're thinking this and that, and then it's like, wow! Then when you go and tell others, oh, hey, what happened? The 2 hours that you were sitting here thinking this and that, you won't even remember. You only remember that moment that you were in the present. So the whole point is Krishna consciousness means being eternally in the present. Mm. So it's actually the full, it's a full experience. There's nothing else that can do that. Because only Krishna is past, present, and future.
When we get into the second canto, then these very issues that Maharaj is touching on will be very elaborately brought out. Because the second canto defines for us, for example, what is Vasudeva Sattva and how it is different from the ordinary mode of goodness. Mm. See, ordinary mode of goodness is like a worldly brahmana. So he has so many alankaras, so many auspicious decorations of good behavior, but he has the seeds of passion and ignorance still deep within his heart. And given the right circumstance, the right association, then these will come out. He'll show himself to be greedy, gluttonous, angry, cursing someone. Vaishnavas don't act like that, you see. And Bhagavatam, studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, going through the cantos, it's amazing how much time is actually spent differentiating between the material mode of goodness and the Vasudeva Sattva. The Vasudeva Sattva platform is simply the launching pad of pure devotional service. It's like the, you can say, the airport you go to. It is not yet actually bhakti, pure bhakti. It is, you might say it is Gyan Mishra Bhakti. But it's like this, that if you have, say you go to Dum Dum Airport and you have a ticket for London, you have your passport, you have all your papers, and you go through all the security and they stamp, and then you're put in one waiting lounge. So you're not in London, but you're in this waiting lounge, you know, this secured waiting lounge, waiting for that big 740s BOA, you know. It's not BOAC anymore, is it? British Airways. British Airways 747 to come rolling in. And it's going to take you to London, it's for sure. So that's what Vasudeva Sattva is like. You're still in, here in the material world. But because there is no more tinge of Rajagun, Tamogun, And because you are engaged in devotional service, there is some additional effort for knowledge, for understanding, and that's actually necessary. Actually, that is why Srimad Bhagavatam, we have made the Srimad Bhagavatam class, which is especially looking at the questions and answers. That's necessary. To inquire is essential. Inquire means gaining knowledge. That gaining of knowledge is purifying the heart. In this way we actually attain Vasudeva Sattva and advance in it, and then we can come to pure devotional service. Which means you get on the airplane, it takes off, you look down, you see the world, material world, it's going bye-bye. Actually, Prabhupada says at one point in Vasudeva Sattva, one sees the whole universal form, just like Mother Yashoda. I in the second canto, we get into this, explaining all these things. Just like Mother Yashoda looked in Krishna's mouth, she saw the whole universe. So there's a point in the development of Krishna consciousness where every devotee will realize that. And that is the... when you reach the perfectional stage of Vasudeva Sattva, it's like waving goodbye to the material world. Bye-bye, we're never coming back. And then the pilot announces, Goloka Airport has just cleared us for landing. Please fasten your seatbelts. And then you come in. So this is how it works. So therefore, this study of the difference between Prakritic Sattva and Vasudeva Sattva is critical. That's a kind of poetic alliteration, isn't it? Prakritic and critical.
Pra-critical.
Pra-critical. So it's critical to the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's so much effort expended in this glorious literature to help us understand the difference between pure devotional service and pure mode of goodness and ordinary mode of goodness. Because if one is an ordinary mode of goodness only, then you're sure to fall down. You're sure to fall down. And that is what we struggle, quite frankly, that is what we as devotees struggle against all the time. When we find ourselves unsteady, when we find, you know, difficulty in controlling our senses, when we find our minds being drawn to sense objects, we find impurities creeping in. Why is that? It's because we're only in the material mode of things. And the seeds of Rajaguna, Tamaguna are there. These are the weeds that we're warned about, the weeds that grow. When one is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, it's like watering the plant, the bhakti lata, but one is not careful to uproot the weeds, which are rajaguna and tamaguna. Like you'll find where Prabhupada is, someone might say, but I thought these weeds were like yoga and you know, and jnana. This is also in the Vedas. I can show you purports where Srila Prabhupada will say, well, it's in the second canon, right? We'll come to them. That this mystic yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga, this is all produced out of rajaguna. It's not produced out of sattva-guna, it's produced out of rajaguna. So the more we're interested in these things as devotees, then the more we're susceptible to rajaguna, and that means we're not in pure sattva-guna. So this is one of the great studies. And this is why we feel it's getting late and you're leaving, I understand, but we have to make this point. This is why we feel it is so essential that Srimad Bhagavatam must be studied so carefully. It must take a lot of time. 1 year a canto. That's how I feel. 1 year per canto. Learn this Bhagavatam so intimately, because then you'll understand these things. If you go 1 month to Kanto, you don't get your Bhakti Vaibhava degree in 6 months, half a year. That's industrial. That's the, you know, not Institute of Higher Education, that's the industry of higher education. It's industrial. It's for some goal. We need people who can give Sunday feast lectures. We need persons who can give morning classes, who can preach to guests. Very fine, very fine. But finally, Prabhupada is saying again and again, we ourselves have to understand this Bhagavatam. We have to realize Krishna in the pages of this Bhagavatam. And that is only possible. Why did Prabhupada write these deep, 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 deep purports? They are so deep. I'm realizing that because I'm comparing Prabhupada's purports with the Satsandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. And Prabhupada's purports are so incredibly deep. Why did he do that? Why did he write such purports? So that we could just yawn, turn the pages, and, oh, this looks, oh, this is far out past time. Okay, I'll read this. You know, all this stuff about creation and modes of man, I mean, I don't understand it at all. But it's absolutely necessary. This is what we want to drill into your brains and this brainwash you, if we must use that word. That every single verse, every single topic in this Bhagavatam is essential for you to know, to get back home, back to Godhead. And if there's anything you think that's in this Bhagavatam that's not important, that I can skip over, I don't have to pay attention, I can sleep through, you're committing an offense against Krishna. And you're not going anywhere, I mean as far as spiritual destination, at the end of this life, if you offend Krishna in this book form. Someone asked me yesterday, but I thought Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple. And I told this person, you better get out a dictionary and learn the difference between the word simple and the word stupid. Yes. Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, but simple means straightforward, honest. You see? Not covering anything up, hiding, going straight according to one's own speed. You know, so we may be slow, but we're going. But stupid, you know, if you take simple to be stupid, I don't understand this. I don't understand this, and I don't want to understand it. It's just too hard. So I'll just chant Hare Krishna. You know, I'll just do some things according to my idea, and Krishna will take me back. That's not the way it works, I'm sorry. Read the Bhagavatam. And it will tell you straight on, that's not the way. You don't go back to Godhead by your own plan. Even if your own plan involves devotional service. Just because you made it up, it won't work. Even Prabhupada used to say, you've got your plan, I've got my plan, Krishna's got his plan. So the plan that actually works is Krishna's plan. So we all have to surrender to Krishna's plan. That means we have to learn the Srimad Bhagavatam. Cover to cover, every canto. So, end of sermon. We're 15 minutes late.
I have a question about you. You were saying how each verse is Krishna itself and you should appreciate and study deeply.
Yes.
You know that one of the characteristics of the Quran is they deal with the dynasties. So
yes.
How can we appreciate that? You know,
because those personalities that are being described in those dynasties are actually qualities. They're actually personified qualities that we should develop.
But sometimes there's no detail, like you get the name.
Well, if you come to our class, we will provide the detail, don't worry.
Because
we're referring to the Satsandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. Prabhupada sometimes, yes, it's a fact, in those genealogical tables he doesn't explain. But Jiva Goswami does, so we will make sure that you get this. Just like the, anyway, there's no time to get into detail. But like there's 28 mansions of the moon, the 28 nakshatras. And they're mentioned in the Bhagavatam. They're born, their personality is born in the creation. And these are astrological, you know, in the West, you know, they always ask, what's your sign? But they mean the sun sign. But in Vedic culture, your sign means your moon sign. Where are you in those terms of 28 mansions of the moon? You see, those are your acquired modes of nature. So that's what Bhagavatam is describing. One of those genealogical tables is actually, in one part of it, is actually describing the appearance of the nakshatras, the mansions of the moon. So all these qualities are there. We have to learn these things.
I have another question. Mm-hmm. You were giving an example of the difference between material goodness and material goodness, etc., and the analogy of the lounge, you know, you're going there. Mm-hmm.